And welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I'm lucky enough to run the Penn Medicine Academy, and I'm absolutely thrilled you're here. So sit back, I hope you have your lunch, turn your Outlook off. This hour is meant just for you. So to make sure you can participate fully, let me turn it over to my executive producer, Youngin Cho from PMA, to give you a couple of housekeeping tips. Youngin?
Thanks, Cindy. Welcome and thank you for joining today. We have a great session for you to meet leaders new to their role during this rather interesting year and to hear about the experiences. We have a couple of extra polls, so please get your cell phones ready, put your comment in chat and ask questions in the Q&A window. Hope you enjoy the session. Cindy?
Thanks, Youngin, and we'll be hearing from you later as today's subject matter expert on onboarding. So for those of you who have been here to Lunch with Leaders before, big shout out and welcome back. We're grateful for your continued support for the program. For those who are new, Lunch with Leaders is an opportunity for leaders like us to come together in community and talk about how challenging leading is under normal circumstances and in the conditions that we find ourselves in presently. I think you'll leave here today, hopefully feeling a little bit energized and knowing you're not alone. We're all in this together and we'll get through it all. So if you have missed past sessions and you're new, go to the Lead Strong website on the UPHS intranet and you can find all of our back episodes there. So let's talk about last time that we were together. I felt the panelists and I, we felt like Sally Field. You liked us. You really, really liked the attitude of gratitude and the feedback was fantastic. You can see some of the comments there around how amazing and relatable each of our panelists were. We had a lot of fun in that one. I still crack up. Dr. Feinberg was answering questions in the chat while multitasking and being a guest. Gotta love that. We immediately heard from Joe Oster from IS. And you may remember we were talking about his charity work and how, unfortunately, he wasn't able to join us for Lunch with Leaders as a participant in the chat. But he did send me a picture of his bow tie that I wanted to share with all of you. So you got a sense of Joe and his dapper style. We love you, Joe. Also had to show a picture of Rastuch dancing at the 2019 holiday party since his dance moves were highlighted so often in our conversation. So big shout out to Mike and his major moves. Okay, so here's today's commercial. Hard to believe it's December. Hope you all had a great holiday. Obviously a little different than Thanksgivings in the past. And with holidays in December and the end of the year coming up, wanted to just say that the holidays are always a little bit challenging, even in good times, nonetheless in COVID. So Jen Brady and the well-focused team within Human Resources, they've come up with a program every day in December. It's kind of like the healthy advent calendar. So skip the chocolate, skip the daily booze. By the way, they have booze advent calendar now. What a concept. But this is better than that. This is going to be about how you're going to keep your health during the month of December, and they have a gift for you every single day. They're focusing on four key topics: coping with COVID, fitness and nutrition, holiday style, holiday fun, and finding the silver lining in every silver bell. So take a look. Big shout out to Well Focused. They're really trying to keep you, your team, in mind as we enter this challenging month of December. So without further ado, let's turn our attention to this week's topic. It's going to be good. All right, let me paint a picture for you. It was August 2014. I had moved to Philadelphia, and the days, they just seemed to be consistently sunny with low humidity. It was like a gift from the universe. I was madly in love with Philadelphia. I had been here all of a couple of days, and I would just walk around and marvel. The only time I had been here besides my interviews was when I took a seventh grade class trip to the Liberty Bell. And I loved Philadelphia then, but it was probably because I was really high on Jolly Ranchers. You know, it was the drug of choice in the 80s on road trips. And so my onboarding consisted of going to new employee orientation on day one. And I remember fondly, it was Diane Lawson, a very distinguished nurse at HUP, who was my trainer. And then there were just a lot of helpful people who came out of the woodwork to kind of help me figure out how to be successful here. And my biggest piece of onboarding advice that I received upon coming, they're like, you have to find a win in the white space. You have to find a win in the white space. And I was totally stressed out. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to totally miss up. I don't even know what the black space is, nonetheless, the white space. And how am I going to figure all this out? And so I remember that I recognized early that having a more systematic, holistic approach for helping leaders navigate the wild west of pen medicine when they were new, well, that was possibly the ultimate white space. And you'll see some of the tools and resources and intentional approach to onboarding that PMA has developed. And we're excited about talking about how do we onboard and recruit people now that we're in such challenging conditions. So in addition to meeting four great leaders, some new faces, some familiar faces, we're going to talk about how we can get even better at recruiting during this challenging time, as well as making sure people are successful when they come into Penn Medicine. We love hearing from you. And many of you may be new, so we want to make sure you're participating actively in the chat. You can ask in the chat or the Q&A function. I'll try to address everything to our panel, and I'd love to hear your thoughts as well. Let's start off though. We've got to check in with you. It's been a heck of a week. So if you wouldn't mind, we'd love to have you participate in a quick anonymous poll. Pull out your cell phones, and you're going to keep them out because we've got two questions following this one. So using your cell phone, text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. You'll receive a text saying you're in the poll. And the question today, again, what emotions are you feeling today? I'd love to hear from you. If you have problems with your polling feature, let us know in the chat, and Gretchen Kolb from PMA will help you out. So while we're waiting for your responses of how you're doing today, it's my great pleasure to introduce you to our guests for today. First up is Dr. Elizabeth Howell. She is our new chair of OBGYN. We have Dr. Mike Posenchag. He's our new chief medical officer at Penn Presbyterian Medical Center. John Sestito has been promoted to the executive director of CPUP, and Dr. Dan Yosher is our new chair for neurosurgery. We also have Youngin, our executive producer of Lunch with Leaders, serving as our senior consultant, talent management, and leadership development. She'll be our subject matter expert today. So let me invite all of you to come off of your mute and come onto camera and say hi to everyone while we look at the results of our poll everywhere questions. Hi, Dan. Hi, Liz. Hi, John. Hi, Mike. Hi, Ian. Mike Posenchag, are you there too, I hope?
I am.
All right, I'm great.
I'm on camera and off mute.
Yeah, perfect. Excellent. All right, let's see what's coming in. Frustrated, tired, anxious, positive. Okay, so we got a nice balance, hopeful. We've amplified anxious and tired. I feel that. Frustrated. Disinformed. Okay, I'm sorry to hear that. You're pushing. Yeah, it's been quite the slog. Give it another couple minutes, another couple seconds, I should say. Meh. You know, that's like one of my words. Caffeinated, great. Happy. Busy. Well, thanks for taking the time out to come to Lunch with Leaders. Concerned. Positive, relaxed. All right, thank you. So some hard emotions that we're coping with once again during this Lunch with Leaders. I don't think there's any surprise there. Thank you for doing everything that you're doing. While we have your cell phones out, we're gonna move into our next question. And it's okay if your results are still coming in. We'd like to have a quick poll. How many of you have started a new role at Penn Medicine over the last couple of months? So maybe since COVID started, how many of you are new to role? If you are new to role, you'll type A. If you're not new to role, you'll type B. We'd just love to see how many new leaders are joining us today. Early horse race was there were a lot of new leaders who had jumped right in real quick on the dial. And now we're seeing that we've got a good split. And about 20% of you, maybe that's a little high, maybe it's a little lower. So quite a few of you are new. So let me just say, welcome to Penn Medicine. I'd love to invite you to put your name and role into the chat so you can introduce yourself. And I'd really love to hear your learnings around your onboarding throughout the program as well. Second question, this goes out to everyone. How many of you have recruited someone new to your team since March? A for yes, B for no. How are you doing with the recruitment? We'd love to see how many people are actively recruiting. So some people are actively recruiting, some not so much. Oh, maybe many of you are recruiting. Kind of funny how there's a little time lag. All right, so it looks like 60% or so, 50 plus percent of you, half of you have been recruiting during these challenging times. I really think today's show, we'd love to hear what's worked for you, what some of your learnings have been. That would be very helpful. And thanks to those who have put A's and B's in the chat as well. So before we get to our panelists, I'd love to invite Young in to just talk to us. Why is onboarding so important? Why do we need to be intentional? Why does this matter, Young in? Can you give us a couple of tips?
Yeah, I'll be happy to. And I just want to say, as I look back to when I first joined 2 years ago, I remember the excitement, the butterflies, and trying to decipher many of the acronyms of pet medicine. But I was struck by the openness, the willingness of so many, and the kindness of so many, including the red coats, who helped me find conference rooms hidden behind extensions of another extension after a long hallway. And one thing for sure, I had a very comprehensive onboarding plan. And thanks to all my PMA and HR colleagues, with special shout out to you, Cindy, Gretchen, and Gab, I know that made a huge difference for me, which I'm so grateful for. So onboarding, it really is a prime opportunity for you to win the hearts and minds of your new employees. It's more than orientation to really engage them upfront. Yet, according to a survey by Gallup, 88% of new employees think the onboarding process is poor, and half of all senior level external hires fail within the first 18 months. On the other hand, when done well, it can improve productivity by over 70% and new hire retention by 82%. In fact, 69% of employees are more likely to stay for 3 years or longer if they experience good onboarding. So there are a few key things that we need to remember that I'll go into. And 72% of employees say that it's that one-on-one time with that direct manager that makes it successful. So a good onboarding process can really make a difference, and your role as a manager is critical. And if I can just touch on a couple of areas. So three primary goals: to learn the business, build relationships, and have quick wins. Those are the really three things that you need to align with what's important to your manager. And this approach is based on a book called First 90 Days, international bestseller by Michael Watkins, who's professor in leadership. So number one, learning the business. I don't know if you heard the saying before, but there's a saying that says, if you've seen one academic medical center, you've seen one. So if you're new, it will really pay off to invest that time upfront. And even if you're not new to pet medicine, if you're new to a role, you have to learn different stories, historical context, and dynamics of that position. Secondly, building relationships. So like John, who is our guest today, many know John, but everyone has to get to know him in this new role. And he has to get to know others differently, the power dynamics and the relationship shift. And there is a new learning curve right there as well. And then quick wins. I know there are many overachievers here, but you are onboarding. And when you're onboarding, your whole goal is to onboard. You don't want to be curing cancer in first 30 days. It has to be something tangible and achievable in that short time frame so that you create that long-term positive momentum. So these three goals apply whether you're coming internally or coming from the outside. But Cindy, it's just that you need to nuance it differently depending on the role and the situation.
Thanks, Young In. Would you mind just pointing to some of the tools and resources that PMA has available for both new leaders as well as hiring managers?
Yeah, sure. So we have a lot of tools, and we'll share the slides after the session. And when you visit the onboarding section of the PMA website, there are different tools and templates by role for new executive, for physician leaders, and hiring managers. And in particular, I just want to call out the importance of onboarding templates. It's organized by the three goals that I just talked about and includes detailed plans around key projects, key initiatives, key expectations, meetings, key stakeholders to really focus your attention on those 90 days. And the onboarding pathway that you see on the right-hand side is another way to access all these tools in one place. And I know some of you have already sent questions earlier asking about how you onboard virtually. And we have a whole section around how you do that right there with ideas on building relationships, doing new technology, having creative team building activities, and managing outcomes in a remote setting. So please come and visit.
Thanks so much, Youngin. I want to give a couple of shout outs to some new leaders that have joined us today for Lunch with Leaders. Ethan, Helene, Ebony, Marla, that could be Maria, forgive me, maybe I need stronger glasses, Courtney, Aaron, Frank, welcome, welcome, welcome. We're really excited to have you at Penn Medicine and today's session. We'd love to hear from you throughout. So let me turn to my panelists. Hi, thanks so much for joining. For some of you, welcome to Penn Medicine. For all of you, congratulations and welcome to your new roles within Penn Medicine. So let me start with you, Liz. What was it like to say yes to a new job in a new city and move in the middle of a pandemic? And Dan, I'm coming and asking you the same question. I mean, what courage, like, how did we do that? How'd you do it?
So I'll just have to be honest with you. It was scary, a bit unsettling, especially in the middle of this pandemic, all sorts of sort of mixed emotions, but very exciting also. And I think it's that excitement and that opportunity to share in this, you know, in the sort of culture of this place that was really exciting for me. And the Department of OBGYN is just such a strong department with great faculty, really devoted to the mission of this institution. And that part of it was super exciting for me. And that's part of the reason that I came. But the other part for me was, you know, I'm a health services researcher and had done a lot of work thinking about the ways that quality of care contribute to racial and ethnic disparities in health outcomes. And I really felt like coming to Penn was my opportunity to implement changes and actually do some programs that could really make a difference. So on a personal and professional level, it was just such a great opportunity. And the one last thing I just want to say is that the other thing that really resonated with me about this place is I spoke to so many different people when I went through the interview process. And I heard over and over again that this was a place that was all about collaboration, about teamwork, you know, about innovation and obviously excellence. But it's that collaboration and that sort of trust and leadership that everyone I spoke to shared that really resonated with me. So for all of those reasons, that's why I came. But I have to admit, it definitely has been at times unsettling.
Thanks for really braving it. We're lucky to have you here. Dan, same question. Was it hard for you to make this decision?
I think Liz is a little braver than I am because I made my decision probably just as the pandemic was really becoming something real. So it was more my situation was not that I made the decision in the face of the pandemic. It was that I made the decision and then kind of the reality of the pandemic happened. So I give Liz higher marks for bravery than I, but I also agree with her that it was kind of, yes, there was trepidation. Yes, very difficult to look for a place to live. For example, normally you would find a place to live months before you came to town and that just the realtors were all closed and it was made the logistics more complicated, but I don't think it changed my sense of purpose and it didn't make the decision any less firm in my mind. I view this as a challenge, and there's some excitement in facing challenges. And I always think of, I like the old quote from Warren Buffett about being a contrarian investor, where Warren Buffett likes to say, when the market gets greedy, I get scared, and when the market gets scared, I get greedy. I think this is a tumultuous time in healthcare and in all our lives, but in all that disorder and legitimately concerning circumstances, there's lots of opportunities. And I think the strength of Penn Medicine has really gone through. And I've enjoyed seeing how well our leadership and all the members of our organization have taken on these challenges. And I think if anything, it's reinforced my decision. And I just rented a place instead of buying a place. So that was my conversation.
Perfect. Thank you. I'd love to ask the new leaders who identified themselves in the chat, what was your experience like saying yes and starting a new job in a global pandemic? And while you're answering that, I'd love to throw the question over to John and Mike. What sold you on your new role at Penn Medicine? Mike, let me start with you.
Sure. Thanks, Cindy. It was an interesting time because I actually was interviewing for it in the beginning of the pandemic. I think my interview day was right after the shutdown started and people really weren't around very much, but before masks, so at least I got to see people's faces while I was interviewing. But it felt a little bit like a leap of faith to make a change in the midst of a crazy time. I actually underappreciated how much of a change it would be, even though I was really familiar with Penn and I had roles at HUP and knew a lot of people and I've been here for 18 years and I even had a role in the health system where I feel like I even got outside of HUP and got to meet people, but I really underappreciated how much of a difference it would be coming into a hospital where I really hadn't spent very much time at all and meeting lots and lots of new people and needing that to really be able to understand what my job would be and hopefully be effective in my job. So it was, I underappreciated how much of a change it would be even moving with it.
Thanks, Mike. What about you, John?
Yeah, so I think like Mike, I mean, I've been here for 35 years, so I'm the youngster of the group. And, at least-
Started in what, eighth grade, Sestito?
Yeah, I think I was five when I first started. And, I actually was interviewing during the height of COVID. So everything that all my interviews were done virtually, there wasn't any, when we were doing group interviews, it was just a little bit odd. But fortunate for me, I knew all the people that I was interviewing with. I had relationships with them. And I think being here for such a long period of time, they knew me. I knew them as well. I think in my previous role, I was the associate executive director before, and I was extraordinarily busy in that role in addition to being the COO of Neonatology and working with Mike. But now I'm hyper busy. And, I didn't think that there was another gear, but there is another gear. But I think because I've been here so long, I'm able to manage that. And, and I think too, I think what really attracted me to make that leap of faith and move into this role, especially in this stage of the career, were a couple things. One is, and I'm not just saying this for saying sake, but Dr. Driscoll's amazing, and she was the main reason why I took the position. The second piece was that I wanted to be able to develop talent underneath of me so that they would be the new leaders coming up forward. And so that excitement of being able to do that really tempered any anxiety that I had in taking this type of position at this point in my career.
Thanks. You've all said so many nice things. John, I'd like to just piggyback and unpack something that you just said. Often when I'm working with new leaders, and that's a really great time for some coaching or some check-ins with people from PMA, people underestimate the load balancing that comes with taking on new responsibilities. Even if you've been here, like Mike and John both said, you're getting many more emails. You're still dealing with a tremendous amount of the big three: ambiguity, complexity, and uncertainty. You're going to more meetings. There's more intensity. And trying to learn how to load balance is part of that onboarding process that sometimes it's easy to underestimate it. From the chat, I just wanted to shout out that Helene said it was really interesting to start, and it was hard to be remote from day one, and yet her colleagues have been very helpful. Helene, shout out to you. Ebony says it's exciting, but there's still some anxiety. Ethan was really happy to be employed. I think a lot of us feel that way too, Ethan. And challenging to miss some of the casual hallway and conference room types of conversations. It was easy for Courtney. She had already worked on the university side for several years, so she knew a couple of people, and she knew that we were going to be able to persevere. So some nice stories from our new leaders who are participants. So some of you talked about your interview process. So some interviewed before, some interviewed during. Were you wearing masks? Were you in person? Were you using virtual? What worked for you about that process that had you ultimately say yes? Anyone want to start?
Well, I think, oh, go ahead, Dan, I'm sorry. Or Liz, go ahead.
I'm sure.
Liz, you go first.
So for me, I had actually done my first set in end of January, my second round of interviews end of February, then COVID hit. And I never had the opportunity to come back and really see a lot of them, you know, see the place really in a meaningful way. And I think from that point on, it was phone calls or it was blue jeans. And, you know, I think I agree so much with, I'm not sure if it was Helena who said about how difficult it is because you don't have those side conversations. You don't really get that texture of a person, you know, it's really difficult, I think, virtually. And I really agree with that. And I'm sure we'll have more conversations about what it's like since I've been here with that. And that is a challenge. But on the other hand, you know, I had multiple conversations then. So if I was feeling a little bit, you know, I had more questions. I just followed up with more people. I spoke with Kevin, you know, multiple times because I needed to feel better about this decision. I wasn't going to have that in-person feel to it. So I think in the long run, it served me well. But I do remember that feeling of not, you know, not feeling as connected and not having that the texture of people, which is so important to the way I operate, has been really was hard and continues to be hard.
Thanks, Liz. What about you, Dan? And then I'll come to you, John. Dan, I can't hear you. You're on mute.
Sorry about that. Typical of how we live today, pushing mute and unmute all the time. Again, I was a little bit before Liz, so I my interviews were relatively normal, and you know we knew that there was something going on, but it wasn't really a prominent issue. Where it's affected me much more is in my onboarding and coming on. But my interview process was back in the golden days when we could sit opposite one another and in a conference room or in a desk. I even had interviews where there were 20 people in a room in a small conference room with me. It seems like another world, but that's what it was.
Thanks. Oh, the nostalgia. We're going to get back there, everyone. We just have to be patient for a little bit longer. John, how about you?
Yeah, I didn't really have an issue with the interviewing process so much, but I think the onboarding, even though I've been here for a long time, was much more challenging because you couldn't get a group of people together. And you couldn't, I think the piece that's missing is you don't get to see their expressions. You don't really get that interaction. And to, you know, really get to the gist of it, I think when you're onboarding, one of the things that I was doing was doing a listening tour, and it would have been great to be able to get groups of people together to have a think tank around directions and things that we wanted to do, and missing out on that personal interactivity. And I think also bumping folks into the hallways and bouncing things off of them has become a little bit more difficult.
So we've gradually kind of moved from the how you said yes, how you interviewed, the courage and bravery it took in these strange times to kind of onboarding. So John, thanks for sharing some of your strategies. What are the others doing in terms of onboarding? What strategies have you found particularly helpful, knowing that so much of this is just not how we would do it? Mike Posenche, can I start with you?
Absolutely. Well, thanks for the question. So obviously, in this world of not meeting a lot of people in person, and certainly at the beginning of my onboarding, there really still weren't a lot of people in the hospitals, and more and more people, I think, have come back. But it's much harder to make that personal connection when you're not seeing people in the hallways or having a big meeting with a lot of people in one room, and then can have that sidebar afterwards where you have that follow-up conversation or make that connection. So I have tried to do a number of different things. I've met some people one-on-one. I've had walking meetings where I've just see the environment with them so that I can learn from them as they can point out where certain things happen or who other people are. I've had combination meetings where I've done some, we start on video and then move to being in person. I find that video where people can have their masks off, especially when you're doing a group of people, allows some connections. And we tried, at least with some of the teams that I've been working with, we've been trying to set some norms where when we are all together and it's not early in the morning or late in the evening where we might be at home or kind of in the midst of trying to get our day together or our families together, that if we're in the middle of the day that we try to have our videos on, we can connect and see each other, use some icebreakers to get to know each other a little bit better, especially as me being the new person and wanting to share a little bit about who I am as a person and not just a worker or a partner at work. So those are just some of the strategies I've used to make some connections, because I think those connections are incredibly important in anyone in an onboarding role, but they're particularly important to me because I feel like that's how I've always been, as a very interpersonal.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. One thing that I think we always take for granted, because so many of us have relationships, is that introducing yourself to people who are new, even in a virtual setting, is a time worth spending, because we've got to be intentional. And so often you may find yourself in a meeting and you don't know somebody. And instead of saying, hold on, would you mind introducing yourself and let us introduce you to each other? I think we've got to be intentional as leaders to do that. Dan, talk to me about some of your strategies. What's worked for your onboarding? How have you figured out how to do the big three? Build relationships, learn the business, and have a couple of quick wins.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that obviously meetings and communication are terribly important. And what I wanted to do starting out is really to get to know the people, get to know the culture, get to know the organization, and do a lot of listening and learn about what exists. And I found that I did pretty well with teleconferencing for one-on-one meetings. I found them very unsatisfactory for meeting with groups. And what I ended up doing is I did several hundred, literally one-on-one meetings. That was my decision. It was not the most efficient approach, but I think it was so important to meet with people individually, because I think you can have those sort of interactions in group meetings when you're in a conference room, when you can look at someone and sit with them and laugh and smile and see each other's faces. But once you're in a situation where communication is hindered by masking, and there's a fascinating neuroscience, by the way, to how difficult that makes communication. I mean, our brains are hardwired to recognize multiple sensory inputs at the same time and converge them together. So when you can't see someone's lips move, when you can't see their facial expressions, the perceptual experience is vastly diminished. So to make up for that, I tried to meet with a lot of people individually, very frequently, one-on-one, with appropriate social distancing. And even in the teleconferencing, I tried to do most of those meetings one-on-one, just because it didn't seem to be effective. You couldn't gauge people's responses when you would talk to a large group. And I felt like I was lecturing when I would have these large group meetings on Zoom, because the interactions are just unnatural. So that was my main strategy. Is it was a brute force strategy. And my wonderful assistant, Lindsay Reynolds, sometimes would shake her head and say, this is a crazy schedule. But I think it was time well spent. And I'm continuing to do a fair bit of these meetings, because I think these relationships are so important. And I appreciate the time that others have given me to make those connections as well.
Thanks, Dan. John, was it different for you? What's it been like getting promoted from within? And ALH has asked a great question. How are you balancing your transition and your onboarding?
That's a great question. I'll start with the first one. So balancing the transition and the onboarding is always challenging, because you're still left with some of your old job and trying to help that next leader that comes in transition into their role. It's even more difficult if there's been an absence of that. And so you're really kind of almost doing two jobs until somebody comes on board. And even when they come on board, you're spending a lot of time trying to make sure they're okay. You have a responsibility. So I think during that period of time, it becomes super busy. I think what you have to do is you have to really prioritize what you're going to go after. So when you're transitioning to the old department, you want to just make sure everything is running well, but not taking on new projects. And then I think when you move into your new role, you really, at least what I did, was spend time more of a listening tour as opposed to trying to solve problems. that gave me some time to do both and manage both in a good way.
Thanks so much. I'd love to invite the audience, for those new leaders, what have been some of the onboarding strategies that have been successful for you? We'd love to hear how you've gone about building relationships in the time of COVID, learning the business, as well as having a couple of quick wins. Liz, what's your experience been like recruiting people now that you're the new chair? How are you handling COVID and the recruitment process? I'd love to start there, and I'd love to work our way around to everyone else.
So I think we're trying to just continue to move forward the areas that we want to recruit in and just connecting with people and trying to make sure that the people that we're interested in have an opportunity to speak with everyone. Obviously, it's quite different. We don't do nearly the in-person recruiting that we used to, but you know, you can do a socially distant, depending on the person, what their needs are, arrange for something that can be safe and that they feel okay about. And we've been trying to be to continue as usual and recruit where we think we need to. So I don't have much to add other than that we're, you know. I guess I should stop there.
Thanks. John, let me jump back to you. I think you're recruiting quite a number of new COOs and new leaders and additional roles. Tips, what are your strategies for doing that successfully during this time?
So I think the probably the most important is make sure that you have a team around you that's helping you with that interviewing process, so that you're getting multiple opinions around an individual. I also think you probably have to spend more time with those candidates, meaning that you probably have to do more video conferences with that candidate than you would normally in person, because you want to give them the opportunity to get to know you, to be able to answer questions. And also, I think it's also a good strategy because you want to acknowledge the fact that this is kind of a weird circumstance, that they're also taking a leap of faith and coming here under these conditions. So I think you have to spend actually even more time interviewing them, getting to know them, making them feel comfortable. And then, like I said, I think involving more people so that you're available for anything that they have that they might still be uncertain about.
Thanks. Let me shoot the same question over to you, Dan.
I
know you're recruiting a ton of faculty and it's a very exciting time in neurosurgery. What's some of your secrets?
I think I agree with John and Liz that, you know, it requires a little bit more time. You have to make, to me, recruiting is a deeply personal activity because you're really asking people to uproot their lives and trust in the culture of the organization and the leadership and the people we recruit need to know that we are sincere, which we are, that helps, but we are sincere in trying to position them to be very successful and we're bringing them on to what we think is a great opportunity. I think probably in addition to having more meetings, more interactions, using teleconferencing, and we've been very strategic in doing very limited visits, a job that we normally do 3 visits, we'll try to do in 0 to 1 visits. I mean, it's very hard. But the other thing I think has happened a little bit is I've had to rely a lot on sort of the networks I have in my professional community to both find candidates and encourage candidates to take what you've been calling the leap of faith. People who know me from past professional interactions are more likely to have that trust. And then the other thing that's helped me is my sort of broader network. Other people in the national neurosurgical community have helped me by sort of vouching for my ability to deliver on what I promise and to assure the people I'm recruiting that I'm sincere in what I'm offering and the mentoring opportunities that I intend to provide. So I guess to make up for the inability to build those personal bonds one-on-one across multiple visits and social circumstances in dinners and light personal interactions, you have to do it a little bit by proxy, relying on your reputation and your past connections and your network. That's what's probably been most helpful for me, but it's very challenging, without a question. And I want to be careful not to limit the candidates that I consider, because there's a lot of good people that I don't know, and I don't want my, my network to create an artificial bias, which I'm, that's what I'm very cautious about and very fearful of.
Thanks, I love it. You're using your relationships to build new relationships and attract the right people. I think that's great. I want to jump back to onboarding. So being you, over the last several months, new in your role, what tips would you have for our hiring managers out there as they're onboarding new leaders, new employees during these challenging times? Anything you'd share? Mike, let me start with you.
I think one of the things I would say is give them a really good direction about who they should meet. So in other words, you know, when I came into this role, you know, I asked a lot of different people who are the right people that I should start to connect with. And I feel like I got a lot of great guidance from Michelle Volpe and Jim Bellinghoff about really who were the right people that I really needed to meet early and start to develop relationships with, because it was really important. Getting back to your three stages and getting to know the business. I know when I transitioned to this role, there are definitely parts of the role that I felt like I would definitely hit the ground running. And those parts, I felt like I did, but also how that part of my job operated here was different, actually. And I learned that than how it operated in other places. Even in the parts that I was really confident about, there still was some learning there that needed to happen. But there were aspects of my new role that I had never really done before. And really getting to know the people that were involved in that work in our hospital, and really getting to know them and really asking a lot of questions, and luckily they were really patient with me, allowed me to really learn about what they did and how they did it and what their work was, so that I could start to understand it better to be able to make some decisions around it. But I think getting back to your initial question, it's really being directional about really expanding your net as wide as possible in terms of who you should be meeting and developing those.
I'm going to take a risk and lean in on this, Mike, and you can totally punt if you don't want to answer this. It's such a human moment where you go from being the top at what you used to do to sort of being at the bottom of this new role and not knowing how to be successful. How did you cope with some of those feelings? I'm sure for me, I remember starting saying, oh my God, I feel very anxious, like I could fail. Or, you know, it's a time filled with a lot of emotion. Were you, what strategies did you use to kind of cope with those feelings of all of that uncertainty?
Yeah, Cindy, you know me really well. So it's really, I left a role a couple of different roles at CHOP and at Penn where I really felt like I knew what I was doing. I felt like I had a cadence. I had some success. I knew how to do something when I was faced with a problem. And when I came into this role, I kept grading myself. And very early on, I kept giving myself C's, just barely satisfactory in being effective in my role. And I remember one day in particular where I had a certain surgeon come to my office. I really felt like that was my one day where I definitely had an F in my job. But as I shared with my friends how I was doing in onboarding into my role, there was one friend in particular that I spoke to in April, and I spoke to him again in June, and then I spoke to him again in August. And it's funny, we were out doing a little kayaking in August together. And he said to me, after the third time he asked me the same question, he goes, your confidence in your role, your comfort in your role, your ability to sense your effectiveness has really changed the three times that I've asked you. Early on, I was kind of worried that you might not think that you were going to be, but you stayed with it. You figured out how to do it, and you've become more comfortable, and you've become more successful in that new position. And I think that I have to think that that is a natural thing and a natural feeling that people go through over time as they onboard into a role. And it's now been 5 months and 27 days since I started this role.
Who's counting?
Who's counting? And I really hopefully others here agree, but I finally do feel like I have a comfort with what I'm supposed to achieve. Doesn't mean I don't have more things to learn or things to do to be more successful, but I finally feel like I have a sense of what it takes to be effective.
Doc, I'm giving you an A-plus for your performance on Lunch with Leaders. Thanks for that answer. Let me throw the question out to everyone else. Tips that you would have for our hiring managers in the audience for onboarding new people, or if you want to talk about your own process of kind of figuring out how to be successful in this role and what's worked for you, I'd love that one too. But where should I start? Who wants to go? John.
Yeah, I think Mike touched on a lot of those points. I think one is that we have to give folks the opportunity to learn the business. I think we're all high achievers and you want to hit the ground running and you want to make a big splash, but I think you have to really take the opportunity and the time to learn the business. And then as well as, you know, building those relationships and who do you have to talk to? I also think too, and I agree with Mike, I mean, I've been in this job for, it seems like it's been for a long time, but it's only been for probably about 3 months now. And I do the same thing. There are days where I'll say, wow, you know, you did a pretty good job, and days where I think, boy, I can't believe they actually hired you. And, you know, and I think the thing that I've learned is to just have humility in that there's things I'm not going to know. And to be open and honest about not having to feel like you know everything and to be comfortable with that. And sometimes in this, it's tough to do that here because I think, you know, I take the approach that I think everybody else is smarter than me. And that's always served me well. But I think having that humility and reaching out and you know, asking other folks and colleagues. I talk to Mike a lot and others, and we bounce things off of each other. And that's always very helpful. But to, you know, to say, hey, look, you know, you're just starting. You're not going to know everything, and you're not supposed to. And if you think you do know everything, you've got a problem.
Yeah, that's a different problem altogether. Let me ask the audience, I'd love to hear any creative ways that you've adopted to making your new team members feel welcomed and supported. And in the meantime, while you're answering that in the chat, I'd love to turn it over to Liz, same question around your own advice to hiring managers out there for bringing people in.
You know, I think I'm better prepared to sort of say what I've been doing that I think has been working for me. And I think great. I just wanted to say that what John said was sort of resonated as well as Mike in terms of first just recognizing I have a lot of questions and that's fine. That's okay. I'm in a new environment and I just ask them. And that's what I do. And I ask my, you know, I ask everyone. I ask my faculty. I ask my residents because I need to learn and I want to learn. And so that's the experience and that's the advice I would give anyone is to just listen and talk. And I think Dan's point about reaching out to, you know, I haven't done 200 people yet, one-on-ones, I don't think, although it feels like it, maybe I have. But the idea of just reaching out one-on-one has been a very effective tool for me. I feel that's the closest I get to kind of getting a sense of somebody. And I too find that the large groups are a little bit harder. And so I find that that is really, really helpful. The other thing I am working on is I'm so used to having met people in my old institution. I'd been there for a long time and I just met a lot of people through various committees and meetings and it was all organic and natural, never forced in my mind because that's not really who I am or I thought I was. You have to be, as you mentioned, intentional and you have to go outside of your comfort zone and or at least for me, and just reach out to people that you might not have a natural overlap with, but you think might be an important person for you to meet. And obviously I've gotten a lot of direction from Deb Driscoll about the right people and who might be helpful. I've met some other people and thought, oh, that person seems a little bit interesting. Maybe we have some overlap. Let me connect and see what we might be able to collaborate on or how we might both be able to help each other out in this process. And then the other thing I think that's really helpful, and you know, I have some new colleagues who've reached out to me who are also new and say, hey, you know what, we should connect. You know, it's nice to sort of hear how each other are doing and what tips can we share with each other so that we can sort of move forward. And I'd say that those are the things that have been helpful for me.
Thanks, really helpful. Dan, can I put you on the spot? ALH has asked a good question that we don't have, but I'd like to ask it. How do you know how you're doing when you're new? Who are you getting feedback from? Tips on who you should be talking to say, hey, how am I doing?
That's a really good question. I was actually just talking about this with my leadership team in my department. with Mike Agliardi. So I've been fortunate that I've built quickly good relationships with the leaders within my department, and they've been very generous, and I could call them all out by name. They know who they are, and that trust has been very helpful. And I would ask that I would encourage everyone to reach out to the new leaders and help them. I think this theme of humility that John articulated and Mike so nicely is important. That we do need help from the people who are already here to be successful. And I was just talking to my COO, my administrative partner, on finding a balance between I want to have a sense of how I'm doing. I mean, it's important that we feel as leaders that we're making good changes and building trust and building relationships. Yet at the same time, you can't constantly be looking over your shoulder for a pat on the back. I mean, there has to be a balance, and we have to have confidence in our visions, but we can't be so overconfident that we don't read the room a little bit. And that's what I've been trying to do, trying to find that balance. And one of my concerns, and you mentioned how we help other people on board as I've brought in a few new faculty, I think in this time where communications are so challenging, and because and this time where we're so focused on dealing with urgent, important problems that, you know, threaten our day-to-day activities, I think there's a danger in losing momentum for our own strategic plans that we're all trying to implement to make things better. I mean, that's why we're here, to make things better, to keep what's good going and make other things better. And I think we have to be even more purposeful. I think we have to be relentlessly organized and focused, and can't let all the very real problems that surround us make us lose sight of the overall goal. And I think I've been fortunate that I have a very good group of leaders around me within the department who've helped keep me on track, who've kind of nudged me gently when I've gone a little too far in one direction. And I hope I've done a good job listening to them. That's a soul-bearing question you just asked, Cindy. Maybe I revealed too much.
I think it was a fantastic, authentic answer, and all four of you are getting A pluses from the audience, who are just so relieved to hear leaders at your level and at your stature kind of say, hey, I'm human and I'm having these feelings too. I want to end on a fun note. Let's have a lightning round real quick, 30 seconds or less. I want to know a fun factoid about you so our audience could get to know you as people. If you can't think of one, you could give me your favorite movie. Sestito, I'm starting with you. Factoid or a favorite movie?
Oh, boy. Right now, it's Christmas Vacation. I think I've watched it 150 times, and I absolutely love it.
Thanks. Posenchag, you.
My initial intention was never to go into medicine. I was a business consultant for 4 years, and then made the leap through a post-bac program in New York.
Hey, you could have been with us in PMA. We would have liked that. How about you, Liz? Factoid, favorite movie?
I'll go with a favorite new show I just watched, which is Ted Lasso on Apple TV. I found it quite uplifting and funny, especially in this moment in time, I found it quite quite good. My whole family.
I'll have to add it to my show list. How about you, Dan? Factoid or favorite show, movie recommendation? You're on mute. You're still on mute. Oh, there we go.
There's some construction noise periodically here, so that's why I've been doing that. I mean, there's so much I could share. I'll mention one thing that I've shared with my colleagues here in the office. I've been very impressed with the Philadelphia fruit trucks. I've where you can go to a truck and they give you 1,000 pounds of cut up perfectly ripe fruit for like $5. I've enjoyed the fruit trucks. That's a little bit of the slice of my life.
I love it. Thank you. Well, I want to say thank you to all four of you, and thank Youngin as well. You can now all check off Be a Star on Lunch with Leaders on your onboarding plan. You've been so great in terms of sharing your stories, your insights, and you've been very helpful to me as well as I hope our audience. So thank you so much. So we have one more show left in 2020. And we've been working on this one for quite a while. We want to hit hit close the year strong and hit 2020 even stronger. So we will have Chris Miller, Tammy Montroy, Karina Sekoutras, and we're going to really close out 2020 on a positive high note and really look ahead for what comes next for us as leaders at Penn Medicine in 2021. So I hope you'll join us. We have an amazing schedule for January and February, starting with Kevin Mahoney in January. So I hope that you'll continue to tune in, make time to invest in your own development, be in community with us as Penn Medicine leaders. And I want to thank each of you. These are very challenging times. And I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I just need to acknowledge how well you're doing, we're doing. I'm so proud to be your colleague. Thank you for your service. Thanks for wanting to step up and make even more of a difference in your leadership role. It's really paying off. I know you're tired. I know your teams are. Hang in there. We're all cheering for you. So I look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks. Don't forget to put your comments on our post survey and make sure you get your nursing contact hours for attending and log out of the poll everywhere. We cannot wait to hear from you. Send me any feedback that you have. We're always listening. Thanks so much, everyone. And